It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson for Kate Archer Kent. This Friday was supposed to be the first all-female spacewalk in history, but due to a spacesuit sizing issue, it's not happening. While women have been part of the space program for decades, NASA didn't send women into space until 1983, a full 25 years after the agency was founded, and a full two decades after the Soviet Union launched the first female cosmonaut. But NASA was surprisingly progressive for its time, banning hiring discrimination long before the Equal Employment Opportunity Act. So why, we wondered, did it take so long to get the first U.S. female astronaut into space? That's one of the questions we'll answer as we delve into the history of women at NASA, women like Peggy Whitson, who holds the U.S. record for time in space.
I watched the astronauts walk on the moon when I was 9. When I graduated high school, they picked the first female astronauts. I got a bachelor's and a PhD and spent 10 years applying to be an astronaut.
How many of you recognize Peggy Whitson's name? Do you remember when Sally Ride became the first American woman in space? Are you a woman in the STEM field? Has your gender shaped your experiences? And how has your gender shaped your experiences as it did for the first female astronauts? What do you remember about the first American women going into space? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Amy Foster is an associate professor of history at the University of Central Florida. She's the author of Integrating Women into the Astronaut Corps, Politics and Logistics at NASA, 1972 to 2004. Amy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much.
Well, this Friday was supposed to be the first all-female spacewalk in history. Two women were scheduled to walk together in space outside the International Space Station. But NASA ran into a somewhat basic issue, spacesuit sizes. Both astronauts would have needed to wear a medium-sized torso component, but only one of those is readily available at the space station. What was your reaction when you heard this, Amy?
Well, I was disappointed. This was one of those moments that as historians, we kind of gravitate to. We look for those firsts. And with the history of the U.S. space program, during the space race, it was all about those firsts, about beating the Soviets to doing something first. And so this would have been monumental because it's not that often that a woman gets to do a spacewalk to begin with. And the idea that two would be doing it at the same time was exciting for at least historians like me, but I think other women who and girls who look to these women as examples and their heroes. So it is disappointing.
Anne McLean and Christina Koch would have been the 12th and 13th women ever to do a spacewalk and the first to do it together. Was the planned spacewalk, was this intentional on NASA's part?
No, a spacewalk, they're happening pretty much all the time with some regularity. And most of the time, we're not really aware that they're even going on. So work on the International Space Station, there's always upkeep that you need to do. I mean, we can go out and mow our grass, but without much issue. But it takes a little more work to keep the International Space Station running. I haven't talked to anybody at NASA, but I have to assume it's simply just part of the rotation. That's usually how it works. There's a spacewalk that I believe is happening today or tomorrow that Anne was doing. So it's the idea of using both of the two people who were doing the spacewalk right now, again on Friday. It's just about giving somebody rest because a spacewalk is actually a fairly taxing experience. It's a lot of work to work in one of those spacesuits. So I'm sure it is just coincidence, the fact that we have two women up on the International Space Station right now who are both trained to do spacewalks. I would imagine it was just simply part of the rotation and it was going to happen. Unfortunately, now that we don't have spacesuits, that's not going to happen.
Well, NASA sent its first female astronaut into space in 1983, more than two decades after the agency was founded and long after the Soviets had already done it. Why did it take so long for NASA to get to that point?
Well, that was certainly my driving question when I started doing this research. Soviet Union flew Valentina Tereshkova in 1963, and we didn't fly Sally Ride until 1983. And I really was expecting that it took federal pressure for NASA to change their mind about putting women into space. But it's a much more complicated question than that, or answer than that. The Equal Employment Opportunity Act was passed in 1972, and that's the policy that requires federal agencies to meet those same expectations of the Civil Rights Act. But even the sex component of the Civil Rights Act had never been really all of that. It hadn't really been part of the protection. Even the Equal Employment Commission, as part of the Civil Rights Act, was basically told this is about dealing with complaints from black men, not even black women. So that sex component was really not a part of what the Civil Rights Act was doing. But James Webb, who was the director or the NASA administrator in the 1960s, came out with a policy in 1966 before President Johnson even said sex needs to be a part of what we're dealing with the Civil Rights Act. James Webb was saying we will not discriminate based on race, sex, marital status, or country of origin, or the big one that just blew my mind when I read it was physical handicap. And this was in 1966, and the American Disabilities Act isn't passed until 1990. So NASA really was thinking, had some pretty forward-thinking policies in the 1960s. But for me, I think the real question is why doesn't it happen in the 60s and why doesn't it happen before 1983 is that NASA was focused on getting to the moon. In 1963, when the Soviets were sending up a woman, NASA was already entrenched in everything that had to happen to get to the moon. And those technological challenges in the 1960s were pretty daunting. When the Mercury program ended, Gordon Cooper was the last astronaut to fly as part of the Mercury program. His flight lasted about 25 hours, and almost all of the systems in his capsule were dead because the batteries were running out of power after 25 hours. Well, it takes 3 days to get to the moon, and then we have to bring them back. And so even just from a simple technology standpoint of the battery, which we think of as pretty commonplace now, was a technology that had to do significant development before we were going to be able to make it to the moon. So focusing on trying to, refit a capsule to put a woman up in the 60s just to make a political statement wasn't something that NASA was really all that focused on. So it takes the end of the Apollo program and then refocusing on a new flight vehicle that is going to be large enough and capable of dealing with the anatomy of men and women, and that's the shuttle, which gets approval to start construction and development in 1972. And it takes until 1981 for the shuttle to fly. And so as we start rotating astronauts through the program and selection, it's 1983 by the time Sally Ride flies.
Our conversation, Amy Foster, about the history of NASA's female astronauts continues in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent.
Everybody wanted to know about what kind of makeup I was taking up. They didn't care about how well prepared I was to operate the arm or deploy communication satellites. Without a doubt, I think the worst question that I have gotten was whether I cried when we got malfunctions in the simulator.
Sally Ride became NASA's first U.S. female astronaut in 1983, a full two decades after the first Soviet female cosmonaut was launched and 25 years after NASA was established. We're talking about the history of U.S. women in space with Amy Foster, an associate professor of history at the University of Central Florida. She's the author of Integrating Women into the Astronaut Corps, Politics and Logistics at NASA, 1972 to 2004. Do you remember when Sally Ride became the first American woman in space? Are you a woman in the STEM field? Has your gender shaped your experiences as it did the first female astronauts? And what do you remember about the first American women going into space? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're talking with Amy Foster, who is the author of a new book about the history of women in NASA, and wondering what you think about this situation. 800-642-1234. Amy, as those who've seen Hidden Figures may know, NASA actually did hire women and racial minorities, not as astronauts, but in behind-the-scenes roles. You talked a little bit earlier about NASA's views when it came to diversity and inclusion. In this regard, they were way ahead of their time in the mid '60s. What was the driving force for that type of culture, and why didn't that extend into the astronaut program?
Absolutely, it was forward thinking. When I was looking at the policies that James Webb passed in terms of equal employment within NASA, I don't really know what his motives were, but I think the fact that he made such a policy change when it was still some years before that was mandated for federal agencies, it's extraordinary. The work that women were doing at NASA, there certainly were women who were working as secretaries and in what we refer to in history as those pink collar jobs. They were there, but yeah, they absolutely were working as mathematicians, and the term we used for them was calculators. So they are the first calculators. But I think when we look at the history of women in the sciences, women had already had a long presence of working in mathematics and working with astronomical calculations. So it made a lot of sense for NASA to continue to hire these women to do a lot of these calculations for launch and reentry, because they had already been there was this long history of women doing that job, even going back to the NACA, which is the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, which was founded in 1915, women were doing calculations in that program. And the NACA is shut down in 1958, essentially is superseded by NASA. So the women who were working for the NACA as calculators are simply kind of shifting over to NASA and doing the same general calculations that they were doing in the NACA. So there's already a long history there.
Okay, so but why not astronauts? I mean, astronauts were chosen basically from the test pilot corps, at which were all men. But mm-hmm. why no women astronauts? Did NASA intend to have female astronauts ever, or what was going on here?
So I think the question that we have to ask about the 60s is, was NASA interested? I think NASA was always looking for, opportunities. I mean, they did have the Apollo program that certainly was a distraction in terms of saying, okay, well, let's stop and put a woman up into space. But there were some medical tests done in the 1960s on women. It makes a lot of sense for NASA to want to put a woman in space from a basic economic and engineering standpoint. So for every pound of cargo that you put into space, and cargo is basically defined as whatever is going to end up in outer space in orbit. So that includes the capsule, all the equipment inside, all the people inside, all the food and water that they need, all the air that they need. That's all cargo. for every 1 pound of cargo, it takes 3 pounds of fuel to get that 1 pound into space. And so if you can reduce the weight of what you're putting into space, then it becomes more cost effective and from an engineering standpoint, easier to get all of that into space. So, and there are limits to the thrust capacity of the fuels that we're using now. And I'm not sure, there's certainly always development on new fuels, but until those new fuels are considered viable options, what we can do in terms of lift capability is fairly limited. So the reason that women make an attractive, you know, option is women tend to be smaller than men. Women weigh less than men. Women drink less water than men. They eat less food than men. And they use less oxygen than men. So all of those things come into that cargo capacity that makes the possibility of putting a woman into space attractive. So the medical tests that were done on the Mercury astronauts were done on a handful of women in the early 1960s. But this was not a NASA program. Literally by 1961, the focus of NASA is to put a man on the moon. And that's about when these medical testings were going on for women. But this was basically the brainchild of General Don Flickinger, who was in the Air Force. He was a flight surgeon, and Dr. Randy Lovelace, who had done all the medical testing for the Mercury astronauts. So they put about 19 women through the first round of medical testing that the Mercury astronauts went through, and 13 of them passed those medical tests, and some of them performed better than the Mercury 7 astronauts. Several of the women went on to phase 2 testing, and one woman went on to phase 3 testing. But that phase 3 testing was done by the Navy. And as more of these women wanted to move on to phase 3 testing, the Navy asked NASA, are you backing this program to put a woman in space? And they said, we're focused on the moon. That's all our attention can be spent on right now. And so they didn't tell the Navy, yeah, run with this. And so the program basically fizzled out. So I think as much as NASA would have been behind the idea of, you know, putting a woman into space at any point, the focus had to be Apollo in the 1960s. And so the focus on putting a woman into space shifts. With the Soviet Union, everything they did in their space program was about prestige. And so it made sense for them to put a woman up before the United States just so they can make that claim. NASA doesn't work under those same principles. It's more about the mission versus the first.
Amy Foster is an associate professor of history at the University of Central Florida. Amy, what was it like for that first group of female astronauts at NASA, and how did having female astronauts change the way things worked there?
It was a new world, I think, for a lot of the men at NASA. I mean, certainly there were these women mathematicians, but at some level, those women were working behind the scenes. So for most of the engineers who were designing the shuttle and designing for women, their interaction with women had largely been kind of that secretarial pool. And so it was very much a culture shock for a number of men at NASA, just because it was such a different, it was such a change to their community to have women who, you know, all had doctorates and were physicians who knew what they were talking about coming in and being just one of the guys. In fact, that was the nickname for the first class of astronauts that included women was the 35 new guys. And so there was a learning curve. And I think that required a fair amount of patience on the part of those first six women. They learned some coping techniques to figure out exactly, you know, what they would do as a group so that engineers wouldn't come along when the second woman flew, who was Judy Resnick, to say, oh, well, she's got to change everything now because she's a woman. So they were very cognizant of the fact that these women were setting precedences.
We've got less than a minute here. Briefly, as we wrap up, what do you think the future is for women in the space program?
Anything they want to do. The future is vast. NASA has grand plans for moving forward, back to the moon, back to Mars. Women are going to be there. They've been in leadership positions at NASA. Clearly, these two women on the International Space Station now, they had high hopes for doing great things. They'll continue to do great things. We'll see women on Mars pretty quickly.
Okay. Amy Foster, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Amy Foster is an associate professor of history at the University of Central Florida, and she is also the author of Integrating Women into the Astronaut Corps, Politics and Logistics at NASA, 1972 to 2004. Coming up next, we'll talk about a possible new moon mission for NASA. Stay tuned for that. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.